Lawrence Ubel joins me now, one of the gurus of how to.
Lawrence?
Lawrence, isn't that your name?
Usually I'm Larry around here.
Oh, are you?
Sometimes.
I say Alvin and Lawrence Ubel, don't I?
It changes. You switch it up from time to time.
Alvin is not here. He's where?
He's at the New York Bar Association giving a seminar on expert testimony and real estate and housing and things of that nature. I was there actually prior to this, and he has a seminar, so I zipped down here and doing the show.
First time you've ever done it in a suit and tie. I'm really impressed.
I know. I was just playing a lawyer today.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. If you have any questions on home repair for Larry, if you insist, known as at least one of the accurate building inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And Larry, we have this running contest in the past when you have thrown out your quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's taken a little while for the audience to get it. Sometimes they get it on the first try. This has been the most difficult one. This is our fourth month with the same question.
I think we're going on to the third or fourth.
I think it's the fourth now.
Fourth month, yes. And
why do you think this is so difficult?
Because it's real. It's kind of obscure. It's one of those things that is in your home, that are in buildings that people take for granted. And it's one of those things that everyone looks at every day in a lot of buildings. Even I look out into your office space here, and I see what we're talking about here, but no one knows it. It's kind of like that space under your nose mm-hmm. that everyone has one. They see it every day, and no one knows the name of it. And it's the
what
same.
Is the name of it?
I have no idea. That's not my area of expertise.
That's tomorrow's quiz.
Well, when you have Dr. Whoever in here, he can go with that one, okay?
But okay, you want to throw out the challenge one more time?
One more time. And I think if no one gets it, I think we're just going to lay it to rest because I'm getting kind of bored with this one anyway. What is the name of the fireproof enclosure around beams and columns?
And that's it. It's an enclosure. We're not talking about asbestos.
No, it's not. No, sometimes it has asbestos as part of it, but these days not anymore, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's what that structure is that encapsulates the beam, mm-hmm. that protects the beam.
And you'd think people would know that.
You would think someone would because, I mean, it was in the book that we pulled it out of.
I think
someone must have it.
Well, whether you want to try to answer the question or whether you have your own question, again, our number is 212-433-9692. Just a few moments before we get to those calls, this is the time of year when the weather changes very abruptly.
Very.
And I'm sure that there are a lot of people who have air conditioners that they were running just a month ago. Now, should they be doing something with that?
Yes. There are a couple of things that I was going to bring up. One is if your air conditioner is in a window, it really is a good time to pull it out of the window. Now, a lot of people kind of don't want to do that.
Well, where do you put it? You can't put it in a closet.
Well, yeah, you can. You put it anywhere you want. Just make sure that before you put it away that you drain all the water out of it, whether it be the water from the condensate or the water from the rain that collects inside. So don't just drip it across the floor. But you can. I, for a bunch of years, used to put them in the bottom of the closets in the rooms that they went to.
Well, what's wrong with just leaving them in the sleeve?
Well, a couple of things. One is that it's a major heat loss on two fronts. One, the air conditioning unit itself and the side adjustable panels does not have a very high R rating. In other words, resistance to heat loss.
Yeah, but can't you put something over it?
You could do more, but actually the unit itself has a resistance to heat loss, and you could, again, cover over the front. But the bigger deal is that most windows, especially double-hung windows that fit into, don't close properly when they're in place. And basically you have an open, drafty slot between the upper and lower sash, which cold air does come into. And you could, again, deal with that by using tape and insulation and so on. But then again, you lose the use and the light from the window while that air conditioner is in there, and you don't really need it there until how many months?
So in the past, you have also recommended rinsing out the stuff.
At this time,
you put it in the bathtub and spray it with a shower?
Exactly. Spray the back. Well, if you have a handheld shower attachment, spray out the back part of it and basically clean the thing up. You can even use a little soap and water on it. And
so it's water. It's not the sort of thing where you can start shorting wires or anything.
Well, especially once it's unplugged. But no, the outside of it is designed to live in the environment. The inside you want to be a little bit more careful with, but if you spray from the back, but the inside usually doesn't get that dirty. It's the outside that you usually have the problems with, and also gives you an opportunity to pull the dust and the leaves and the pollen and everything else that's in our air out of that unit.
Just one more thing. Mm-hmm. What about insulating the windows when it really starts getting cold?
That's another good one. I was getting to that. But first thing, if you have Stormin screens, if they're fixed Stormin screens, it's time to install them, the storm portion of it. If you have a triple track, which is basically what I mean by a triple track, is you have three tracks. Two tracks are for the storm windows and one is for the screen. In the summertime, you put the screen down and slide one of the windows up. Now put that window down and slide the screen up and put the window down. I just actually recently did that for the several windows that I have in my house that are triple tracks. And it actually, I have to tell you, changed the draftiness component to my bedrooms. As far as
insulating, we want a little draft, don't we? Because that keeps fresh air coming in.
If you can open the window, and you can always open that a little bit also if during the time of year. But when it starts getting really cold, you're probably not – the amount of heat loss that a normal home would have is going to be quite a bit. But also, if you don't have storms and screens and you don't have thermal insulated glass, then you want to put in these some have temporary plastic storm windows that you could buy at any home center or hardware store, and they're quite effective. You double face tape around the frame, and you put up this plastic, and then you hit it with a hair dryer, and it tightens it up. And so I've seen some
shrink wrapping.
Exactly. And in some situations, you can't even tell that there's actually a plastic there unless you come close. But they do tend to wobble a little. And people draw on them in children's rooms. It actually is quite fun. You give them some colorful markers and let them go at it and make a stained glass for their window. It's very nice.
Should we take some calls?
Yes, we should.
Our number again, 212-433-9692. And Julie from Brooklyn Heights. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Julie. What's
Hi.
Up?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm sure a lot of people have this problem about the water in the bathroom where the shower is so difficult to keep to regulate, and it takes a while for the hot water to come up, and then it gets too hot and
right.
then it gets too cold, whereas the sink water... there's no problem. You get hot water instantly.
Well, let me ask you a question, first of all. Is in your tub, do you have two separate valves or one single valve?
One.
It's one valve?
Yeah.
It's not two, one for the hot, one for the cold, like you would have in a sink?
No. Well, the sink has the one also.
And the tub has
right
the...
to left.
Yeah,
but
and
the bathtub and a shower is a circular.
And you find the problem when the water it gets too hot. Like once you set it, it gets hot. Does
well,
it fall?
What happens is you go all the way over to the left.
Different, and it gets hot, and a millimeter less, it gets cold.
Yeah, she takes it to the left because it's cold when it's coming out, and then while she's in the shower, it gets very hot. I've had the same experience.
But let me ask you a question: when you actually have it adjusted, does it change while it's adjusted properly?
It takes a while for it.
Well,
to...
Well, it could be that I'm not sure of the situation here, but you're saying is that the one in the sink gets hot instantly and the tub doesn't. It could be that the tub... How big a building is this? Is this a...
It's a high-rise.
It's a high-rise. It might be a problem with the third pipe system. Most buildings have what they call a three-pipe system, a cold water supply, a hot water supply, and then a hot water return. And if this particular tub is not connected to that... in that return system, it's going to take a while to get the water to come up. I would actually, in this particular case, actually consult with the super of the building And ask them, why is this? And also it could be that if that single lever valve is very old, it's going to stop functioning, and it might need a replacement of, or a rebuild of that single lever valve. And that's where I would start first. First, I would talk to the superintendent. Why does it take so long for me to get the water in the tub where it doesn't take me long at all to get in the sink that's 2 or 3 feet away? And he'll probably have a something to investigate there, but also tell him about the tub, the shower valve body, that it probably may need a rebuild.
We are going to be going to a break in a moment, but I thought I would put some of the people who have answers to the quiz on and see if anybody's going to get it this time. Our first caller is Susan from Freeport. What do you say it is, Susan?
Actually, I was calling to let you know what the name of the space under your nose is called.
Oh.
What's that?
It's a Filtrum, F-I-L-T-R-I-M.
Okay, well, good. That shows you how good my medical education was.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I can sleep tonight now.
And breathe.
And we go now to Bob from Manhattan. What do you think it is?
I think it, well, it's a little unfair. One of my careers, I've done dozens of different things, but one of my careers in the past was asbestos abatement.
Uh-huh.
And it's fireproofing, but... I'm going to say a name brand. It's called Cafco.
No, actually what I'm going for is you're in the right ballpark. What I'm called is what do they actually call the structure in which they, you know, assemble this enclosure around a beam or a column? There's actually a name for that. And
a race? No, it wouldn't be a race.
No, it's not a raceway or a race. It's something different.
Thanks for your
call. But thank you so much.
And now Bob from New Jersey. Hi. What do you think it is, Bob?
I think it's a plenum.
No. A plenum would be, you know, something that you would draw air through. This is not designed for drawing air through. It's just a structure that it holds the insulating material against or next to the beam or the column.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you for trying.
Definitely.
And Sophie from Queens, what do you think it is?
Well, I was thinking it was a soffit.
You know what? It could be – it's not really a soffit in that sense, but some people may think of it as such, and that's a very common – but let's put it this way. This could be a soffit, but a soffit isn't always this.
I got you.
Okay?
All righty.
Well, we still don't have an answer, and we are going to go to a break, but we – invite you to keep trying. Our number 212-433-9692. Also call in with your questions on home repair for Larry Ubell, one of the gurus of How To, also one of the partners in Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, and a regular on this show. We'll be back right after this. We're not calling you Mr. Fix-It.
No, I guess not. Mr. Guru of How To.
Mr. Guru of How To.
That would be my father, I guess. I'm just Guru of How To.
Son of Guru of How To. We have a couple of people have written into our comment line. One, Eric in New York City, says, I live in an 80-year-old plaster-lathe walled co-op apartment. What is the easiest and fastest way to run a dedicated AC outlet from a new circuit breaker panel in the kitchen to a bedroom on the opposite side of the apartment?
Well, first of all, the first easy answer is hire an electrician, because actually most electrical codes say that aside from changing a light bulb, you're really not allowed to do anything in the electrical system, including running additional circuitry. So, but the easiest way to do that type of thing would actually be to, I mean, the question is easy. What is aesthetics have to do with easy? There's a product called wire mold, which you can actually mount the electrical lines on the exterior of the wall and use wire mold to go up along the wire, but they tend not to be as aesthetically pleasing. The other way is inside the wall and try to snake it through as many of the wall cavities as you can. But there's also quite a bit of breaking of drywall or plaster, whatever your building is made of. But I'm hesitant to tell people to go running electrical circuits, especially with how much the I have to say that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, there wasn't as big a pushed for enforcement of these type of things. And these days, almost anything you do, you have to get an electrical or plumbing sign-off, depending on what you're doing, if you're moving, adding, and so on.
I think that's reasonable,
so
because it really, it's dangerous.
It really is. I mean, we're not talking about rebuilding a lamp here. We're talking about actually running a – and even if you rebuild a lamp, it's a temporary – you know, it's a lamp that has a certain amount of life expectancy.
You don't want me rebuilding a lamp either.
Well, I don't know if I don't want you doing that, but maybe we'll do it together sometime. But in electrical, this is something that's going to stay with the building, and even if you've done something quirky and you know it's quirky, are you going to tell the next person that owns that place what quirky thing you've done? Chances are not, or you might have forgotten. So it really is work that should stick with licensed electricians for that type of work.
Rick from Marlboro, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's up?
I'm working on a Levitt house in Marlboro, and it's sheetrock walls, and I guess Mr. Levitt didn't know about the invention of screws, so they use nails on the sheetrock.
Well, this is, I have to tell you, before you go on, this building is built when?
I would say early 60s.
That was the standard of the industry, was using drywall nails, usually very wide, very flat-headed nails that are usually about anywhere from an inch and a quarter to an inch and three-quarters long. Correct?
Okay.
All right, that was standard. But go on.
Well, what's happening is I've got some horizontal seams that have bulged out. Now, my plan is to dig out the tape and re-spackle a couple coats.
Mm-hmm.
Should I do more than that?
Yes.
Indeed, what should I do?
What I would do is actually buy yourself some drywall screws. Because the problem is the nails tend to pop out a bit because the wood dries out and lets go of the nail. What I would put in is some drywall screws, usually, again, about inch and a quarter to inch and three quarters, depending on how thick the sheetrock is, and reinstall put in these drywall screws all along where the seam is going to be. That way the seam is stabilized, and then when you put the tape and spackle the seam, it will come out, it will probably prevent cracking and stay a lot more stable through your life with the building.
Okay.
Should I put screws in beyond just the seam?
Yeah, actually, if you're finding places where the nails are starting to pop through, then that's a good place to put screws also. I mean, if you put in a screw like every 6 to 8 inches, that wouldn't be bad either. It definitely won't hurt.
Okay.
It might even help for the future.
It will, and what will tend to continue to happen is the nails will tend to pop out. So you might want to actually, if you can, remove the nails and replace them with the screws.
Angie from Jersey City, how you're on the air?
Hi, Angie.
Hi. Thank you. We had a leak in our roof, and now we have water stains on the ceiling of our living room, which I think is plaster.
Mm-hmm.
They've spackled over it, and the stain has come right back through. They haven't painted it yet. And I know they can use, like, a stain or a, you know, like a Kills or something like that. But my question is, does it come through because it's still wet? And if so, is that bad?
No, it's not. No, it's not coming through. Well, first of all, you should definitely have someone go up there to confirm that it's not wet anymore.
It's not in the attic. I mean, the water must have come like down the wall, then across the ceiling. So the space is between. It's like the ceiling of the first floor. So there's no way to know unless you like dig out the ceiling.
But what I'm saying is, actually, they can actually touch this material with a moisture meter, and that will tell you whether it's wet or dry. So that's an easy part to do, and most craftspeople who do that kind of work do have that kind of equipment. It's not that expensive. But let's take the assumption that it's dry. And the stain is coming through because of a lot of the impurities that get dragged with the water from the roof, which, you know, has a lot of petroleum products in it, and some of the other impurities that are along the wood also get dragged with the water through the stain. So the stain comes through. So when you paint over it, it comes right through. There, like you said, there are a couple of products, paint products, that are designed for water stains as a primer for water stains. But what also works is any silver metallic paint will also work very well because of the property that they use to make silver paint acts as a sealant. Also, I've heard some people use shellac also to paint over because, again, it seals the stain in. So there are ways to go. But what I would do, just for an experiment, buy a small can of white paint, paint over it, and see if the stain comes through before you decide to paint the whole space.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, so we don't have to worry about mold.
No, if it's dry and it's ventilated, and it shouldn't be a problem. Mold is only a problem when you have repeated recurring dampness without ventilation, and you know, if the cause of the leak was taken care of, the mold shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Thank you for your call, Angie. And Paul from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon.
What's up?
At a second home of ours upstate, in an addition, I just installed two hot water heaters, one for radiant heating and one for traditional hot water.
Mm-hmm.
The radiant heating, they're both vented through the side through PVC-type things, not mm-hmm. through the roof. The radiant, the on-demand radiant heat one is fine, but the brand-new hot water heater, mm-hmm. which is a traditional one, gives off outdoors mm-hmm. a terrible gas smell, the kind you would get, you know, if your gas burner was left on. Now, it's a propane gas.
Okay, so it's propane, which is, you know, yeah. The first thing I want to ask is for the radiant heat, is that a water heater or a boiler?
It's a water heater, and it just heats, it's a traditional, it's an on-demand, but it's a water heater.
But I'm saying it's always the...
It was designed to heat hot water.
Yeah.
And it runs the radiant heating. Does a nice job of it.
Yeah, I understand. But why didn't you just go with a small boiler or some kind of tankless water heater system, which would turn on and off as demand? Because you're saying it's on demand, but actually that tank is probably going to maintain the 140 or 150 degree water regardless of...
There's no tank. It only runs when it turns on.
Oh, so it is a tankless...
It's an on-demand hot water
heater. Oh, so it's a tankless system, and that's...
Yes, it's a tankless system. Mm-hmm.
But the other one is a traditional tank system, or that's also tankless?
It's a 30, 40-gallon... Mm-hmm. Traditional tank system for the hot water.
Okay, for domestic hot water.
Yeah.
The
company that put it in, and they said, "Oh, no, that's normal," but I'm not convinced that this is normal.
Are you sure that the unit that they installed is for propane or?
They put the propane adapter on it. In fact, the company that installed it only delivers propane.
Okay, so that, you know, and they're saying that the smell that comes out of the exhaust is normal.
Yeah, and
I would actually, because what's the name of the water heater? Do you know?
White something.
Yeah. White water heaters. I've seen them quite a number of times.
They're fairly standard in the industry.
Yes, I would actually call the people from White because something sounds a little wrong there. Because I'll tell you something, when a unit
sounds smelly to me.
Yes, when something is I've inspected more than my share of water heaters, both propane and natural gas, as well as oil. And when the units are off, nothing should really be coming out of the vent. So something is going on there.
No, it only smells when the unit's running.
Oh,
it's outdoors,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you walk up to the front of the house, it smells like rotten eggs. Now, the on-demand hot water heater has, which is 3 feet from the other one.
Right.
No.
It could also be that, you know, there is a certain amount of, because in traditional units tend to be somewhat a little less efficient, you know, you're getting some unburned gases, where in the tankless unit or the more efficient one, that it's getting a more 100% burn and you're not smelling anything. I would still pop an email over to White and see what, and that would not be Sanford White, but that would be the White company that makes water heaters. Pop one over to him and see what they say, because this does concern me. I'm a little concerned about that.
And we thank you for your call. You know, I've never been propane. I've always been anti-pane. We have a lot of callers who think
Touché.
They know the answer to the quiz. By the way, Larry Ubell is here, the guru of how to, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Our first caller is Paul from Freeport. What do you think it is, Paul?
Yeah, hi. Is the term you're looking for channel rail?
No.
But thank you for calling us. And now Brian from New York. Hi, Brian.
And when I heard this weeks ago, I thought fire rating, but I've never thought of fire rating as a noun.
No, it's not, but you're in the ballpark.
Now I'm looking at graphic standards, and it actually has pages and pages of descriptions of wall and partition construction, and each is identified by its fire rating. So you
No, it's not fire rating. It's but you, it's kind of it's so simple. You would you'd be very surprised when I finally give up the ghost on this one.
Wanda from Brooklyn.
Wanda,
I'd like to try fire stops.
No.
No.
But
okay.
Thanks.
But thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Martin from New York. What do you say?
Hi. Whenever we build these things around columns or beams, we call it shaft wall.
I know what you're talking about, but that's not what we're looking for. But thanks.
And we'll try now. What is it? Ophir from Flushing.
Yep. From Brooklyn.
Okay.
From Brooklyn. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fireproof assembly.
A little too generic. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
I love when people go, didn't win. It makes me feel special. That's nice.
Is it Greg from Brooklyn?
Hello?
Yes, Greg?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call. Are you looking for a fire encasement of a beam?
Well, that's what we're looking for, but there's a specific name for that encasement. There's a special name for it. And
special name for encasement.
Right.
All right, then. So I don't know any further than that.
Well, thank you for calling.
But thank you.
And now Bill from New Jersey, what do you think it is?
I think it's either a chase or a bulkhead.
No, but thanks.
This is
a hard
frustrating.
One.
Frustrating. Dorothy from Chatham, New Jersey, what do you think it is?
Yes, hi. Type X fireproof sheetrock?
No.
Okay.
But you could use Type-X fireproof sheetrock as a part of this.
In other words, to make it.
Right.
Bob from Brooklyn.
What's up, Bob?
Hello.
Yes.
I believe there was two products. One was called a monocoat that you put on, and the other one was Calfco.
Yes, but we're not looking for an actual product. We're looking for the name of the enclosure, okay? And there's actually a specific name for that.
Okay, well, let me read something from my – so far, no answers.
No answers.
Leonard in Manhattan just bought a house where there is – oh, no, I don't want to do that one. I want to do Paige in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Is a gardener. She has some clients who have irrigation systems which are blown out and shut off for the winter. Mm-hmm. She wants to know if it's also necessary to shut off the water to the spigot on the outside of the house.
Okay, that's a good question. Yeah, the simple answer is yes. But that's only required if you don't have a frost-free valve. There are valves that they now make that actually the valve itself is anywhere between 12 inches and 14 inches long. So the valve itself is actually on the interior of the building, but the handle is on the exterior. So when you shut it off, it shuts it off on the inside. But if you don't have that special kind of valve, usually on the inside of the building, somewhere near the valve's exterior, is a shut-off valve. So in the wintertime, you have to shut off the inside valve and open up the outside valve so the water could drain out. And that actually brings around to a point that this is a good time of year for a lot of people in New York who live in what they call self-managed buildings, for them to actually get some people in there to take care of some of these issues, because many of these buildings share supers or don't have supers at all and rely on their own people to take care of things. So it's a good time to get someone to consult with to deal with these issues.
We have very little time, but Alicia wants to know if you can put antifreeze in the boiler.
Only in some boilers, but that's only really required when the boiler is, let's say, installed on a roof enclosure, which is not heated. But if your boiler is in a heated part of the building, and it should never be required. And I would definitely consult the manufacturer before doing that.
We have another intrepid listener who wants to answer the quiz. Ed from Jersey City.
What's up, Ed?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up?
Is it a beam cage?
All we were looking for was cage or caging. So how did you know?
I have to fess up. Yeah. I called a friend of mine who is a builder.
That's fine. I mean,
at this point, we were desperate for anyone.
Four months with the same one.
Listen, we're pretty much out of time, but I'm going to put you on hold. And what is he going to get?
He's going to get Save Money, Save Energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis.
And so one of my producers will take all the information from you and pass it on to Larry. And you'll be receiving that in the mail, okay?
And if they want to, they can email me any questions that they didn't get to hear at larry@accuratebuilding.com. And accuratebuilding.com is also a website. They have a lot of useless free information.
And we'll see you on December 10th.
When I go forth fixed and tell New York.
Wait. Let's try it right. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to tell New York and the greater area how to,
whatever.
Go forth and fix, save money, and do it safely.
On tomorrow's show, T. Boone Pickens with an oil man's thoughts on how he can resolve America's energy problems. Also, a look at the assortment of subcultures that make up the contemporary art world. Then, hear about a new film series celebrating the life of painter and critic Manny Farber, plus our latest underreported. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blake Neeshick, Sarah English, and Stephen Valentino. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Julia Corcoran, Alex Hotz, and Leslie Dickstein. Dimitri Krasny was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LoPate, your host. Thanks for listening.